Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben Smooth Ride Bowling.
Smooth Ride. I like it.
Yeah, usually I like to ask our super producer, Noel Brown, for a nickname or two. But today, I think I'm going to take a nickname because, you know, remember how I used to have these part-time jobs on and off?
Oh, yeah.
Gigs back when the economy was really rough? Well, I'm doing some other stuff now, right? I'm a waiting room Muzak consultant. So it's like, you know, it's a question of more like not so much what kind of music we're playing, but how smooth is the jazz?
I request Muskrat Love.
You're the guy who writes in and requests Muskrat Love. Scott, people don't want to hear that at the dentist office.
They don't want to hear that at all.
But the reason I'm getting this, this fictitious part-time gig going again is not because I'm in dire straits financially, but because I'm saving up, Scott. I want to get a luxury car, and that sparked a question, that you and I have been kicking around for a while. And
yes.
What exactly is a luxury car?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if we're going to be able to define that today. And that's the problem, that I don't think there is a strict definition of luxury car. Now, remember when we talk about muscle cars, we talk about other types of vehicles, sports cars, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
There are strict definitions that those vehicles have to meet according to some groups.
Right, you know, yeah,
some,
yeah.
A lot of arbitrary groups out there that say, it has to be this way. This is the strict definition of a pony car.
That's a great example.
Or a muscle car, mm-hmm. or a family sedan or whatever. I don't know.
Sure, sure. A hot hatch.
Yeah, hot hatch. Exactly right. Warm hatch, whatever. but yeah, there is no strict definition of a luxury vehicle. And this is kind of the problem, because there's an even more blurred line now between what we call, I guess, mainstream or ordinary cars. I don't like to use ordinary or regular terms, but let's say mainstream cars and luxury cars. And that's grown even more blurry in the recent past because,
sure,
you know, these, the luxury features that are available on some of these mainstream cars. And then there's also the added confusion of luxury sports cars.
Right. Yeah. Are those also, should they also be considered luxury cars?
Yeah.
How
often have you seen a list of the most luxurious cars in the world and there's a Bugatti Veyron on it, or there's a Lamborghini Aventador on it? They're very expensive. They do have a lot of features. I understand that, but those are sports cars to me. I mean, to me, that's a sports car. And I understand, you know, that there's exclusivity that comes with all this, but that's part of what we're going to be kind of talking about today and just kind of, trying to figure out. And There's a lot of press right now about what is a true luxury vehicle and what should we be calling a sport luxury vehicle? What's a luxury sports car?
Right.
Is that new Hyundai, is that a true luxury vehicle, or is it something that goes along with the brand?
Right. I mean, like the Mercedes S-Class, that's a luxury car, but what about the E-Class? Is that not qualified? Does that not make the cut?
Yeah, these are all things that we're going to talk about. I mean, I've got a bunch of questions here, and I don't know if I'm going to answer any of these as we talk about it today, but my questions were, I mean, just think about this. If you want something to ponder here at the beginning of the podcast.
Yes.
Is luxury based on the experience plus the product, or is it just the product? Or is it just the experience and not so much the product? Can a product be better than the brand itself? I mean, that's another thing. Is there one standout in the brand that puts it into that category?
A diamond in the rough.
Yeah. How about the brand name itself part of the luxury? Is luxury social? That's another thing too. I mean,
yes.
Is it meant to impress others more than just being luxurious by itself? Is it all product maybe? I mean, that's something we kind of already talked about, experience versus product. But
sure.
What about quality, beauty, safety, comfort, or all those part of the luxury experience, or can you do with, you know, maybe only two of those,
mm-hmm.
or I guess variation of that. It's weird. There's no strict definition of this thing, but as a lot of people like to say, you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah, it reminds me very much. This conversation reminds me very much of an episode that happened between the United States legal system and the publishers and marketers of the James Joyce book Ulysses, and they were discussing whether or not this book contained obscenity. And this court case resulted in one of those, well, you know it when you see it kind of things. And I always think about that when we have these sort of, blurry is the word you used. I would say kind of subjective, feelings or definitions about a certain thing. Like, okay, one thing we know for sure is that luxury does not necessarily equate to just technology. Just bells and whistles aren't good enough.
True.
Right? Because there are a bunch of cars that have a super boatload of amenities, but they're not luxuries.
Oh yeah, you can get a fully loaded, I don't know, I'm going to just pick a car.
And sure.
I don't know if this truly has it or not, but let's say a Honda Fit.
Yeah.
And so it's a relatively low-end Honda vehicle.
Uh-huh.
An economy car.
It's got everything.
But you're going to load it up. You're going to put everything that's available into that car. That has, I can guarantee you that those features are features that were found in luxury cars, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
That were only found in luxury cars 20 years ago, that were options, expensive options.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've talked about that so many times, the trickle-down effect, you know, of, you know, the way that, you know, power windows, power locks, whatever
sure,
it was.
Heated seats.
Yeah, I mean, rear defroster, even things like that.
Air conditioning.
Yeah, I mean, just more than two speakers in the car.
Yeah.
With some of them have, you know, like, mm-hmm. some of these cars now have 9, 10, 12 speakers, whatever. You know, that's part of their premium package or whatever, but I bet you it won't be long before that becomes part of the standard audio package in a lot of cars. And that's
right.
just the way it works.
Yeah, it always seems to trickle down in the car buying world. So if you want to know what the economy cars of, what'd you say, Scott, 5 to 12 years from now will have,
mm-hmm.
look at the luxury cars today. And that stuff is going to later be in, like, one thing that's happening now would be onboard cameras. Right?
Definitely.
That's a big example. But luxury vehicles, it appears to be, since it's not technology centric, it appears to be more about the integration or the ease of using that technology.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not supposed to be work to drive a luxury car.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you're right. Luxury is something that goes above and beyond what you, on the most basic level, need, right? So it seems that any car, really, is it's technically a luxury. It's a luxury to have a car, right?
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
So, I don't know. There's this weird way. You can look at it in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, no, that's definitely a luxury brand. I know that's a luxury brand. So
sure.
whatever they create has to be a luxury vehicle. That's not necessarily true either.
And it makes waves too.
Oh, you know what? I'm just thinking one off the top of my head right now.
Yeah.
What was remember the Aston Martin?
Mm-hmm.
Now that's kind of a sports car, luxury car mix-up well, right?
Yeah,
they make that vehicle that's called the Signet, I believe.
But it's not spelled like the word Signet. It's CYGNET.
Yeah, I think. And didn't it mean like Swan or something like that? I don't remember exactly what it meant. But anyways, it was basically a Toyota IQ
mm-hmm.
or a Toyota IQ.
Yeah, Toyota IQ dressed up.
A tiny little car. And I think you had to own an Aston Martin before you could buy one of these.
Right.
That was the rule that went along with this. It was a strange little vehicle, but is that a luxury car? Because it's branded or badged in mm-hmm. Aston Martin. And that's part of the problem, I think, is that some of this rebadging that manufacturers are doing, or carryover of parts, and I know they've done that since, you know, the beginning of automobiles, really.
Sure, yeah, of course.
Mostly. That, you know, if there's a parent company and they make certain products that can then be adapted into the luxury market, I suppose, if they add, you know, plusher seats or mm-hmm. more amenities of some mm-hmm. kind, you know, luxury features to that basic vehicle that they already have, you know, a platform already in place. Is that truly a luxury car when they do that, or is that just rebadging? I mean, I know in some cases they're really adding a lot of value to the vehicle by doing that.
But not all cases.
You're right.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So we've talked about, like, it's not technology, it's the way you interact with technology. We've talked about whether it is just the name, which I think it has to be the name and the product. I don't think, like, just the name will carry over, because we have seen some experiments with this stuff, even going outside of the world of automobiles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you get, I'm trying to think of a good example, but you get like an item, a luxury amenity along with your purchase of the vehicle, like your own set of luggage that's branded for the car.
Oh yeah. I don't know what you call that.
But you know what I mean? Like those kind of additions, again, you get this watch.
Yeah.
That is supposed to be part of a package because they're selling, you know, this Ferrari or Lamborghini experience. Mm-hmm. But those are more, again, luxury sports cars.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And see, that's part of the whole problem here. I mean, when you buy a Ferrari,
okay,
you're not buying that because it's a luxury car. It's a luxury to buy a Ferrari.
Sure.
But you're buying it because it's a sports car. But then someone will say that that is a luxury sports car. And that's the way it's classified now.
Oh, yeah. And we should talk about those luxury classifications because there are a couple. They change across countries. One is the compact segment, right? Like the luxury compact.
Compact luxury.
Compact luxury when adult size luxury is too much. No, I'm kidding. it's not child size luxury. This is a U.S. kind of thing. But in Europe, it might be known as like a compact executive car.
Okay.
Or something. And then there's
let me ask you a question.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're maybe talking about like when Lexus puts out like a hatchback or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that's, I think one of the examples that I read in one of the articles was the, I can't remember. It's like the CT200H.
Yeah.
I think it's a hybrid and
the Lexus CT. Yeah.
The CT. Okay. So it's a Lexus. But it's a hatchback. It's not necessarily like, you know, their big stately Lexus vehicles that they sometimes put out, mm-hmm. you know, the big sedan type cars with the plush ride and everything. It might be smooth inside, but it's not like the great big four-door sedans that are cushy and it's like sitting on a big couch when you're riding down the road. I don't mean to be disparaging to them. I mean, that's a compliment in the luxury segment is that it's a comfortable ride.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you get that experience in the CT. Same experience as you would in another product of theirs, another Lexus vehicle.
Yeah, that's a great point. Another example would be like the Audi A3, which shares a lot of stuff with the Volkswagen Golf.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have what would be called like the midsize or just the regular executive cars. And this would be stuff like the Lexus GS, if we're going to stick with Lexus.
Okay.
You know, but the stuff that we're really looking at that I think we should focus on when we define what is a luxury car, both of these sections can get a little bit blurry, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you said, the high-end luxury or the full-size, the grand saloons, you know what I mean?
Sure.
The cars of sheiks and princes.
Well, what about – okay, you said Lexus, and you're talking about them, but there are also a lot of the Toyota product line that match – what the Lexus has as well. It's just it's a badging issue because
that's true.
Because Lexus is the luxury division of Toyota, if you want to look at it that way.
And that's part of the brand, right? The experience, the social aspect.
Yeah. And okay, I looked up this list of who owns who and, you know, luxury and sports car brands, that kind of thing, right? You know, like the parent company and then the offshoots, you know, the companies that they also own that they purchased along the way, along the decades of automotive history, right? And for example, BMW owns Rolls-Royce. And I don't know if a lot of people really know that, but, you know, both of those, you know, manufacturers put out quality product.
Put out ultra luxury cars.
Yeah. They're luxury. They're also, BMW is more towards the sports car side of it, you know, towards the driving experience side of
it.
Rolls-Royce is more towards, you know, the overall plushness, the experience of owning a Rolls-Royce and, you know, the dealership experience and all that. Fiat owns Ferrari, they own Maserati, among other things. Ford Motor Company owns the Lincoln brand. I'm going to talk about the Lincoln brand in just a minute.
I'm glad you are.
General Motors owns Buick and Cadillac. Those are both Buick entry-level luxury, we'll call that.
Sure.
See, there's another one, entry-level luxury.
Right. A warm hatch.
How about Honda and Acura? Now, Acura is technically the luxury brand of Honda. However, I mean, I understand it's a nice car, it's expensive, it's got a lot of nice features, it's plush, but do you consider an Acura a luxury vehicle?
Absolutely not.
Okay. What about, Hyundai, who's kind of new to this game, which we'll talk about in a minute also, they own Kia.
Mm-hmm.
Tata Motors, you know, the India company from India, they own Jaguar and Land Rover. So, you know, those are high-end vehicles.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some plush vehicles in both of those. Lineups.
Are you kidding?
Daimler AG owns Mercedes-Benz, of course. Nissan owns Infiniti. Toyota Motor Company owns Lexus, like we just talked about. Volkswagen owns Audi, Bentley, Bugatti, Lamborghini, and Porsche, all which make, I guess we'll call them luxury sports cars.
Right. Bentley makes regular, I would say, orthodox luxury cars.
Yes, yes, like, I agree.
Like what?
Kind of along the lines of Rolls Royce.
Yeah, yeah. What was the, there's...
Is it the Mulsanne that you're thinking
of? Oh yeah, the Mulsanne is, yeah, the flagship, but there's also, there are these quotes where people often group, Rolls Royce and Bentley together and they say, you know, well, you guys make very expensive boxes.
Yeah, you know, that's true. It really is true. But you know what? They're so comfortable. They're so powerful. And you know, they're pushing the horsepower of some of these sedans. Like you can get Mercedes now that have V12 engines that have 671 horsepower or 651 or whatever it is. Is that becoming more of a sports car or is that still part of the luxury aspect? I mean, is it saying that you've got power to spare? Because Rolls Royce and Bentley, they have some incredibly powerful engines. I mean, again, 700 horsepower in these things.
Let's just talk just for a second about the Mulsanne, just to show like the ultimate, you know, high end, inarguably a luxury car kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And we're not saying it's the best. It's just one that is clearly not anywhere near blurred line. So this thing has a V8, right? It's got 752 pound feet of torque.
So you can pull a stump out with it if you have to.
You could if you, which I'm sure a lot of Bentley owners do.
Yeah, sure. With a chain.
Right. It takes them 12 weeks to build it though. And there's a lot of customization here. And that I think, Scott, is a big mark of a luxury car.
How long did you say it takes to build one?
12 weeks. Well, because they have, They have a build rate of about 700 to 800 per year, and it sold out for 2 years when it came out. So 2010, you know, it debuts, and then sold out till 2012.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an exclusive vehicle because they limit the amount that they put out because they can't put out that many.
Right.
Because they're all hand-built and crafted, finely crafted.
And I would say, yeah, exclusivity is a big part of it.
Well, that's the other thing is that, you know, if there's a factory that's just cranking these out one after the other, is that luxury? I mean, I've got a lot of questions. I don't really have a lot of answers today. I mean, I know that's the problem, but there isn't a strict definition. And that's just why we're talking about this.
Yeah.
Because these blurred lines, as we keep saying blurred lines, but it really is confusing.
It's foggy. Yeah. Well, if everybody can have it, then it's not a luxury.
Okay,
that's just how the market works.
One thing I did want to get to, and I've still got more to cover here, but and we won't spend too much time on this, but I saw something, this is a while back, maybe a year ago. Mm-hmm. I saw something in Autoblog, and the title was, Lincoln, Not True Luxury Yet, Says Ford Design Chief.
Oh, Jay Mays, right?
Yeah, Jay Mays. So here's the guy from Ford, the head design boss guy at Ford, who is in charge, you know, is seeing over the Lincoln brand as well. He's saying that, the Lincoln brand, or he said that the Lincoln brand is not yet true luxury. Now, I know that the Lincoln brand has been around a long time. I mean, I want to say that, when was it? Back in like the early 19 teens, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Is that right? I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I'll have to check my facts on that, but, he says that, and here's part of the comment. And this is why he says it. He says every brand needs to have DNA and a unique selling point. And things in that vehicle that make you think that that's a particular brand, like that's exclusive to that particular brand. But he's saying that they're still using a lot of the Ford products to create the quote new Lincoln because you know they had this kind of rebirth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They
a perfect rebirth.
Yeah. So they've been around since again.
Yeah, 1917. Lincoln Motor Company is founded.
Okay. So they've been around a long, long time.
Yeah.
And they had a fantastic past. I mean, a lot of luxury vehicles created throughout, you know, the decades.
And a lot of luxury vehicles patterned after their success. Too.
Sure. And then they went through some tough times.
Oh yeah.
And kind of almost went away, really.
Right.
And then they were reborn again, I guess, a few years ago. Remember all those ads that was like the new Lincoln and the new brand new products that they were going to come out with?
Right.
And they did. But when you look at, you know, take for example, the MKZ, right now, I think the guts of that,
the mechanicals, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically, a Ford Fusion.
Yeah.
Underneath. And
true.
It does have a lot of Lincoln parts that, you know, make it unique Lincoln, but it's not entirely a Lincoln product. And that's what Jay Mays is saying. He's saying that there's kind of this maybe even a 10-year cycle that that Lincoln brand is going to have to go through before it can be considered a true luxury vehicle.
And some people call that optimistic.
Well, true luxury brand. Yeah, yeah. And when you say optimistic, they're saying It's not 10 years. How long do they say it might take?
30 years before it can really be back in the luxury class, because right now it's missing exclusivity.
Okay. Okay. I get it. I get it. But yeah, man, you look at that. That MKZ is such a great looking vehicle. I really do like that.
Yeah.
I
mean, and it's a flagship.
It's definitely different. And they've got, you know, here we go again. The MKC, which is, again, another exciting vehicle from, I don't know if I want to say exciting, maybe not exciting. It's an SUV.
Yeah.
From Lincoln. The MKC, and a lot of people, we have listeners that write in, they love theirs.
Oh, yeah. They speak highly of it.
But it's a Ford Escape-based vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And it's not truly a Lincoln vehicle, Lincoln alone vehicle. And I understand why Ford does this. I get mm-hmm. it. They're trying to, you know, strengthen the brand, and they're investing in the brand. They're not giving up by any means.
Right.
They're going to continue working. You know, they're having a little bit of production issues, or they had some production issues, but they're getting things back on track. But again, Jay Mays is not terribly optimistic about it when he's saying 10 years, maybe, and other critics are saying 30 years before the Lincoln brand comes back as kind of a quote unquote official luxury brand.
Ah, yes, my friend. But wait, there's one very important thing that we should mention. This is a Western discussion at this point. And there's a very interesting thing that's happening in some other parts of the world, in China and India, especially as the average income increases, right? As people are finding themselves with more disposable income and more market access to things, manufacturers noticed something weird when it came to China. A lot of brands that are seen as maybe old or not as popular or square or on the way out here in the States and in Europe are going like gangbusters overseas in China.
Yeah, that's right, because they love the Buick cars over there.
Right, what? I mean, somebody explain that to me. Also, one of my friends showed me this isn't just, you know, with cars, Scott. One of my friends told me that Pabst Blue Ribbon, which is one of the cheapest beers around here, is considered a higher end thing.
It's a high end drink?
Higher end, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I guess just the brand name carries some degree of cachet. And so this,
they're not drinking it to be ironic or anything like that?
I don't know if they are, man. I don't know. I'll have to ask.
Okay.
But, you know, this is important to say, because in the Lincoln conversation, especially, the Lincoln is, at the time of that article, is preparing to go on sale in China.
Strange.
Strange days.
Very strange. Yeah. It's interesting how that all works out, though. I mean, you know, there's a market for everything, I guess.
And it does prove, you know, this one of the questions you asked before about this social aspect. We see it again sometimes in clothing in the United Kingdom. I think it was Burberry or something,
mm-hmm.
Became popular with the non aristocratic element. And, because of that, people stopped wearing this stuff.
No kidding.
And
strange.
Yeah. Furthermore, I just got one more.
Okay.
I'm going overboard with these comparisons, but on the show Brain Stuff, we looked at studies of names. There's a very interesting social pattern that takes place with names that could also take place with brands. And it seems that we can trace the rise and fall of a name's popularity, a first name, right? If we see what people in a given year are naming their daughters or their sons, and then look at their income or their wealth level. And then we'll see that, people who are lower on that economic scale in later years start naming their kids those kind of names, which makes the people at the top of whatever this measurement is stop naming their kids those names.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'm going to have to look that up.
So maybe that's what's happening. Like, maybe there's a thing like that happening.
Just an ebb and a flow that naturally happens. And this is just the way it's working out right now.
And maybe with luxury.
And just so we're clear on this, before we move on, I want to tell you that I'm a believer in the Lincoln brand. I really am. And I feel like it's a luxury brand right now. I really do. Because those cars, I mean, especially the MKZ, I really, really like the redesign of that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
If I could afford one, I would get one right now. I'm kind of in the market, and I would love to, but it's just a little bit out of reach for me right now. But
It's a big swing.
I don't see the 10-year thing. I mean, I understand that that's, you know, the Ford boss guy saying that's what it takes, but in 30 years, come on. I mean,
I really think the global market is going to have an effect that, makes it less than 30 years for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. But okay, one last kind of, one last document, I guess, that I wanted to talk about here. And it comes from an article that's, again, at this point, 4 years old. So it's a little bit dated in the products that they mentioned, but the ideas that are mentioned in this article, some of these are really evergreen ideas.
Okay.
And I don't know if we're going to have time to go through all this. We're kind of running out of time here, but I'll quickly try to summarize some of this stuff and just go through it quickly. Stop me if you'd like. But the idea was that USA Today back in 2011, the end of 2011, so it's not that old, I guess, maybe 3 or 4 years old, they got together with four luxury car executives or luxury car brand executives and sat them down at a round table and had a discussion about what makes a luxury vehicle. And mm-hmm. this is perfect because this gets the inside impression of what it takes to be luxury mm-hmm. from the top execs of these companies.
That's great.
So a few people that they talked to Don Butler, who is the marketing manager for General Motors Cadillac brand. They talked to Brian Smith, who is the vice president in charge of marketing for Toyota's Lexus brand. They talked to Ludwig Willisch, who is the, I hope I'm saying that right, is the president of BMW of North America, and Steve Shannon, who is vice president of marketing for Hyundai Motor America. And the reason Hyundai was invited to the table is because of their, at the time, brand new model, which was the Equus. And I think I'm hoping I'm saying that right. It's a weird name. It's EQUUS, I think.
Yeah, you're saying it.
And they also have the Genesis sedan, which is another luxury vehicle. But
right.
I think they were mostly talking about the
Equus.
The
yeah,
Equus.
Because it goes to the dealership, too. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So they wanted to explore the new definition of luxury, like what it takes to be a luxury brand. And again, a couple of these things that they mentioned, the products are a little outdated because they're talking about stuff that's going to come out in 2012.
Sure.
But the evergreen ideas, you know, the things that they said that I thought made most sense were, you know, just some things that I highlighted here and we'll go through them. So just for instance, the Cadillac brand rep said, the definition of luxury changed. Luxury was size, space, comfort, and presence, but now luxury is defined more by the feel of the vehicle, he says. And the Toyota rep said, the difference isn't just in price. Luxury has to do with the overall experience, the car, the dealer, the reputation of the brand, and the satisfaction of owning that certain brand.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like it has to do with your own personal satisfaction. When you get into the vehicle, you really enjoy driving that product. You know, the BMW rep said, it's all about emotion. That's what distinguishes a luxury car from the mainstreamer. And that makes sense from BMW because they're into the driving experience.
Right.
It's a driver's car.
Yeah.
Hyundai, this is an interesting take on the whole thing. They say time saved and hassles reduced are the essence of luxury appeal. So they're saying that, you know, whatever is easiest for the customer is a true luxury. And it kind of, again, that kind of makes sense that they would say that. Now, the other angle this whole article took was that, and it's not really a problem, but they call it a problem. The problem is that, luxury items are starting to creep into mainstream vehicles. So you may have a $20,000 economy car mm-hmm. that offers luxury options that were only available 30 years ago as an expensive option.
So the exclusivity is watering down.
Exactly right. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's all being, I guess watered down is maybe the best way to put it, mm-hmm. Ben. Yeah. So it's like you're maybe not getting quite the exclusivity that you did before, mm-hmm. but you're able to afford the features that were at one time luxury that you saw as luxury, but now luxury vehicles have taken another step higher. I mean, there's luxury cars out there, Ben, that have night vision now. Did you know that?
Yeah.
They've got
yeah.
Electrochromatic, sunroofs that, you know, you touch a button to dim them or, you know, somewhere in between, whether they're opaque or transparent. Just amazing stuff. Massaging front and back seats.
Which sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah, it kind of does, I guess. But, the idea is that the brand name can be tarnished by watered down models,
right?
And
yeah.
As is the case with Cadillac, because remember they had the Cimarron back
yeah.
in the 1980s.
Oh yeah,
Cadillac really suffered because of that, and
yeah.
other brands didn't have to come back from stuff like that. But Hyundai has never had to deal with that because it's brand new to the game. But that's another problem. I mean, is that it's not a well established brand, and if
yeah.
you're looking at a luxury vehicle, you might not necessarily think that, you know, you'd want to get a Hyundai.
Right, right.
Even though it's a great vehicle.
If you're in that market, you kind of want to be part of that long story, you know, the Rolls-Royce story, which is just an amazing kind of journey that people feel like they're a part of when they own a Rolls-Royce.
Yeah.
There's another side to this though, too. You can get caught in the crossfire here. There's a great note, from Butler that you mentioned earlier, you know, with Cadillac. I just want to read this. He said, "Our heritage is 109 years. People think fondly of the Cadillac. The problem is, quite often, it's the same way they think about their grandfather. They love their grandfather, but they don't want to spend a lot of time with them," which is just poignant.
I understand what he's saying there.
Yeah.
It's 113 years now.
Right.
I went through, while we're talking about it, I went through and kind of laid out how many years all these manufacturers.
Oh, yeah. Good.
So I found the dates from all these. Now, Cadillac, as you mentioned, was founded in 1902. That's 113 years now. BMW has been around for 99 years at this point. Mm-hmm. Lexus, 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hyundai, if you want to consider the 1999 LZ, which was their first full-size sedan, which later became the Equus model.
Yeah.
If you want to consider that as like their entry-level luxury offering, they've been around since 1999. I think the company was founded in 1947.
Yeah, but very different.
So we're going to give them 16 years in the luxury market.
Okay.
I think that's being favorable.
That is very
so
kind.
So 16 years versus 113 years, you're more likely to consider or to associate Cadillac or BMW being a luxury brand versus Hyundai.
Yeah.
Or Lexus. Or, you know, any of those. I mean, Infiniti. All those brands that just kind of popped up are Acura.
Well, because name recognition is such a big part of it and brand familiarity, mm-hmm. you know, the question is like, why am I spending this much money for a Hyundai?
Ah.
You know what I mean?
Ah, but you know what? Let me tell you this. This plays right into the Hyundai thing. And this is maybe the last bit that I want to cover from this article. And I thought this was really showing. This is really, really telling, I guess. The role of the dealer. And this is how the execs talk about how the dealership experience plays into this whole thing. And we know the story of the Rolls-Royce, as you just mentioned, you know, that you can go in and really design the whole thing from the, you know, bumper to bumper.
Yeah.
Anything you want it's all just a matter of how much money you want to spend on the thing,
mm-hmm.
really. Anything you want. So this is really the dealership experience for the rest of us, I guess. You know, how comfortable are they going to make it and what part does that play in it? Well, okay, so here's how they looked at it. Lexus, I'll break it down by brand. Lexus, the rep said, or the executive said, luxury is at least 50% of the dealership and the experience. The luxury side is people that want to come in and feel like their needs are being met at the dealership, and we work hard at that. So they're trying really hard to make people feel welcomed at the dealership
sure.
and that, you know, we're going to take care of you no matter what it takes. We're going to
never
make this
a hassle.
Right. Exactly yeah. right. So Hyundai's experience is even more extreme. They say, time spent at the dealership actually gets in the way of a luxury experience. So Hyundai lets them avoid it because Equus shoppers needn't even visit the dealership. The car will be brought to their homes or offices for test drives and then picked up and dropped off for service. So that's one thing. That's one thing that you can't get more of. Time. So they're time
smart.
Conscious. Yeah, very time conscious. All right. And, we'll get to these last two. Cadillac says we offer the vehicle pickup and drop off as well, but there are people that want the relationship with the dealership as well. They want to know that it's not just a transaction. You know, it's not just all about money.
Yeah.
The person, they want to know that the person there actually cares about me. The person respects me. The person also looks out for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
We'll proactively say like stuff like, "Hey, Scott, you know, since the weather's coming in, we're going to go ahead and I know that you just dropped this off for a quick oil change, but we went ahead and detailed the car too."
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. I mean, Cadillac would be likely to happen there. All right. Last one is BMW, and this is, the kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. He says, I would rather say being the purveyor of the ultimate driving machine that the product is more than 50%. So he's saying dealership's important, maybe a little less than 50%.
Sure.
It's mostly the product in this case
right.
because we sell a driver's vehicle and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So,
which is in line with what their mission is. They say that.
It does. I mean, but it's a luxury brand. I mean, it really is. Mm-hmm. And I think somewhere in here they said, you know, someone who is going to buy a BMW is perfectly fine getting a you know, BMW, the M3 versus getting like the 7 Series, which is a great big four-door sedan.
Right.
And they're not asking for a bigger car. they know it's a luxury car, but it's a luxury sports car, and they're happy driving it. They're not wanting the M3 to grow to gigantic size.
Right.
For that plush ride. They want it for what it is.
Yeah. They don't need a bunch of cushy bench seat, lazy boy recliner type interiors, right?
Yeah. But, you know, there's other BMW buyers that do want that, and they go into the higher number series vehicles.
Uh-huh.
I get that. I get the experience is different for all of these manufacturers, and that's across the board, you know, the ones that weren't invited to this roundtable as well.
Right.
They would all have different answers. And again, this is a little bit frustrating in that there's no strict definition of luxury. You can't point to it and say that's luxury because of this feature or because of that feature. It's more of a feel thing. And it's based on your own impression.
And management of these companies, let us be honest, Scott, management of these companies, each group is defining luxury car in the way that makes their product seem the most luxurious.
Yeah.
By that definition.
I mean, I hope we've got our listeners thinking a little bit about
this.
What is luxury to you? And maybe you can help to clear up the lines, I guess, between luxury car, luxury sports car.
Right.
Or entry-level luxury car versus luxury car. Or
ultra-luxury or whatever. Yeah, is that like the only real luxury car?
I guess. And I know this is just some people trying to reclassify a vehicle so that they have their own little tagline or their own sales approach or whatever. But what really does set apart luxury brands or luxury products for you? What makes it a true luxury?
And what matters the most to you about that, right?
Yeah, and it could be the dealership. It could be the product. It could be the way it makes you feel when you drive it. It could be the social aspect, you know, that the people admire you when you pull up into that car. You think that they do.
It could be your monocle and your top hat.
Yeah, maybe you're just, you know what, and there's nothing wrong with this. Maybe you're just really proud when you hand the keys over to the valet and they see what car you're driving.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand the feeling behind that. But what is it about it that makes it feel like a luxury car to you, and what makes you proud about owning that product?
Yeah. Personally, I see them whenever I see somebody with a car like that, you know, I think of it as an investment because it lasts so long. The resale value can be great. And also, yeah, there is some cachet, but those companies are typically very good to their customers too.
Okay. Can be. And we'll end it on this. But think about like that old Rolls Royce that we keep seeing at these shows around town here.
Oh, yeah.
That thing has dropped significantly in value. It's a mid-80s Rolls Royce, right? And it's probably.
Oh, yeah. It's like early 90s.
Oh, I don't know how much that thing cost, but. It's definitely not worth
it. It definitely dropped. Okay, we have to talk about this for you real quick.
Okay.
All right. So one of the shows we went to, we started seeing the same Rolls Royce show up, and I had always thought, man, it'd be amazing to get one, but they're so expensive.
And it's a great car.
And it's a great car. It's in great shape. And so Scott, you came back one day and said, well, you know, I actually looked at the prices of this, and, when you told me the price, I was shocked.
Yeah. It's like an economy car price now.
Yeah.
Or a little bit more, maybe.
Which is, you know what? So maybe I am wrong there about the resale value on these. I just assume they're cars you can keep forever to the point where they become.
Well, they devalue so much initially. I mean, you know, they've got such an initial high price that they ask at the dealership. And then as soon as you drive off the lot, you know, the old story that, you know, it loses 40% of the value or whatever it is. And then every year after it starts to come down, unless it becomes a collector's item or it's so rare.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're left with one of only 10 on the road or something. And
so
then it starts to gain in value. Yeah.
Yeah. Or unless, you know, 4 or 5 decades pass, right? And if you can keep it going that long.
Yeah. You know what? It probably will come back in value.
Yeah.
But are you going to hang on to it that long? I don't know.
So let us know if you want to learn some more about luxury cars. You can check out every podcast we've ever done, carstuffshow.com. In fact, our very first episode was on luxury cars of the future.
That's right. It was.
Which is kind of dated now.
It's way old.
Yeah. But go easy on us with that one. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Write to us. Yeah, please. We have a lot of questions. We didn't have a bunch of answers, but we want to hear what you think. So check out those questions we asked at the top and write to us with your responses. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.